Welcome to the Bardcast. It's Shakespeare, you dick. We are your hosts. I am Lisa Ann Goldsmith.
I am Owen Thompson.
And today's episode is called Alfresco Shakespeare. Would you like to explain what that means, Owen?
Yes. Well, I'm sure that our audience realizes that alfresco is kind of just a fancy way of saying outside.
Outside, outdoors.
That's what it means. If it's alfresco, then it's in the daylight. Well, not necessarily. It's just outside. Anyway, so obviously Shakespeare in the Park is like a famous thing. Right.
Yes,
and it's not just Shakespeare in the Park here in Central Park in New York. But in fact, there are several companies all over New York City and all over the country that do Shakespeare primarily outside.
That's right. In fact, we did outdoor Shakespeare with both of our guests today.
That is correct. That's why we're going to have them on. And Lisa Ann and I have done a tremendous amount of Shakespeare, both outside alfresco, both as actors and directors. And now that the summer is winding down, we've been talking about doing this topic for some time. We thought now was a perfect opportunity to do so, to talk about how it differs to do Shakespeare in a proper indoor theater where you have lights and sound and all this kind of stuff.
Microphones or
outside where you don't necessarily have all that kind of stuff. It's very different.
Or any of that stuff. So we decided to have two friends of ours on. The first one is Jeffrey Bender. He is a brilliant actor, has done like 18 seasons with the Shakespeare Theater of New Jersey. And in fact, Owen, the 12th night that Owen and I did together in Tulsa, which we talk about, Jeffrey was also in that production as Sir Andrew Aguecheek.
That is correct.
And our other guest is Jennifer Tober. She is the artistic director of Pittsburgh Shakespeare in the Parks. And I have directed her as Rosalind in As You Like It, but I have also acted in productions for her company. And we are going to see what they have to say about this whole topic. So we have our dear friends with us here, Jeffrey M. Bender and Jennifer Tober. Say hi.
Hi.
Hello.
So we thought that these two friends of ours would be perfect. Not only are they amazing artists in their own right, but they have so much experience with outdoor Shakespeare, including
with us in different ways.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Owen and I did Twelfth Night with Jeffrey in Tulsa, Oklahoma, 5 million years ago. And I have performed in plays for Jen's company, Pittsburgh Shakespeare in the Parks, but I also directed her as Rosalind in As You Like It for her company.
And just to round it out, Jeff and Lisa Ann and I have also worked together inside. So that's a nice contrast.
That's right.
Not doing Shakespeare, however. We did a restoration comedy called The London Cuckolds together in a theater in New York City. But not outside.
That's right. So so we would love to introduce you each and have you tell us what you want us to know about you. Jen, you want to go first?
Sure. I'm Jennifer Tober, and I'm originally from Philadelphia. And after that, I lived in New York City for a long time. And then I moved to Pittsburgh. And I moved to Pittsburgh in 2005, and I was bored, and I was underemployed. And I spent a lot of time in Frick Park reading The New Yorker and drinking bubble tea. And I realized, actually, it was during my friend Linda Miyachi's outdoor yoga class that I needed to start. I needed to produce an outdoor play in Frick Park in Squirrel Hill because it was this beautiful, like, natural amphitheater. And I went ahead and did that in November of 2005, which is not a great time to be outside. And so Pittsburgh Shakespeare in the Parks is in its 17th year. And I do a lot of just the administrivia work, of course, which the glamorous term for that is producer. And I guess artistic director. And I've also been in lots of Shakespeare plays, a lot of them outside as well. Oh, am I too loud? Okay.
you can back off your mic a little bit.
I'm loud. It's all that training. Yeah.
It's all that projection.
That's right.
It's softer. Okay.
And this is our friend Jeffrey Bender. What do you want us to know about you, Jeffrey?
Oh, I was born in 19, my name is Jeff Bender. I am an actor and a professor primarily, and a professor. I teach theater appreciation at Rutgers University. I have anywhere from 750 to 1100 students in one semester.
Oh my God.
So it's one of those big
wow.
ones. But it's fun. It's great. I can't wait to get back fully into the classroom again. Acting has been a little dry over the pandemic. But I miss it. And I can't wait to get back into it. Lots of Shakespeare on my resume. A lot of it outdoors, and there are plenty of pros and a few cons to it that I'm sure we'll get to the meat of in this next hour.
Indeed, we will. So let's start with you, Jen. So you've been the artistic director of an outdoor Shakespeare company for 17 years.
Yeah.
So can you tell us what that has been like for you and maybe give us some highs and lows?
Well, let's see. I mean, I think overall it's been great. It is a lot of work, but I love Shakespeare and I love being outside. So outdoor Shakespeare is like my favorite thing in the world. Besides my children. And it's great. I mean, I moved here from New York City where I worked with a bunch of different theaters. And I think Jeff and I may have worked for New York Classical Theater, both of us, because I saw your friends with Stephen Birdman. And it just really, that was, you know, we did a lot of shows in Central Park, but parks all over the city. And that was really magical for me, just going into different neighborhoods and like bringing Shakespeare to people. And so that I think is my favorite part about it is, you know, we'll be rehearsing in some park in Pittsburgh and kids will ride their bikes by and stop and go, what are they doing? You know, or people will, one time there was a, you know, there was a, I think it was Henry V. They were rehearsing a fight without costumes on, and it was a pretty low key thing. And some passerby, you know, came up and said, "Hey, stop hurting her!" And just like, yeah. And the director came up and said, "This is a play, you know." And the man wasn't so sure, you know, because there were no costumes. It was a very low key rehearsal in the park. And so just that, you know, I like that it's outdoors and our productions, Pittsburgh Shakespeare in the Parks, tend to be rather like lo-fi. So we are not mic'd, although we may revisit that this year after performing in very noisy Schenley Plaza. But it's just so neat to erase like any fourth wall and just have it be about like the ground and the words and the audience and the performers. I like that. And I think that strips away a lot of the like the boringness or the fear or the perceived, you know, thing that Shakespeare's going to be boring. Because it's like right in your face. And I think the audience really appreciates that. You know, and it's hard performing outside. There are bugs and helicopters and there are drones. There was a whole time period where it seemed like everybody had drones that were flying overhead, wanted to do something with our people. You know, and it's a lot of work lugging everything around outside. There's rain, you know, but it's really wonderful just to connect with people and to touch people's lives and also to serve people. Our shows are free, so to serve people, you know, and to reach people that may have, you know, may not have previously been exposed to Shakespeare. So it's one of my favorite things.
So you do Shakespeare not in one park in Pittsburgh, but all over the place,
right?
Like like so many. And you referenced New York Classical here in New York, and there that for people that don't know, it's not just the Delacorte and the New York Shakespeare Festival doing Shakespeare in the Park in New York. There are probably, I would say, 10 or 11 companies.
Absolutely. Shakespeare
New York
in the
City.
Parking lots.
Yeah. Yeah. I've done Shakespeare in the Parking Lot. I've worked with Hip to Hip Theater a lot that does very similar work to New York Classical. And you know, there's a bunch of companies. So, and like your company, most of these places will perform in a lot of different locations.
Yeah.
And like, you know, today we're in Fort Greene, tomorrow we are in some, like by the Unisphere in Flushing, that kind of thing. So you tour around as well.
Yes, we've been in, gosh, maybe 15 different city parks, and then other locations as well. We're going to be in North Park in Pittsburgh, which is a county park. So
yeah, that's actually where I'm going to be seeing Jen's company is doing Hamlet right now. And I'm going to be going to North Park specifically because it's a new location that I've never either performed in or directed in. So I'm excited to see how that works.
And our old friend Harper York is in that production, I believe.
Harper York, who was, yes, our dear friend Harper York, who was on our English Shakespeare versus American Shakespeare episode.
Oh, excellent. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, she's great. Yeah, it's an all-female production, and I really like it. So.
Oh, I wish I could see it.
Me too. Come to Pittsburgh.
You know, it's ironic. I was actually supposed to come to Pittsburgh in a couple of weeks. It's a long story, but I'm not going to be able to.
Yeah, he was supposed to be staying in my house.
I know.
But as my mother would say, Jen, from your mouth to God's ears.
You know, That's right, LA.
So, Jeff, can you tell us some of your experience doing outdoor Shakespeare and maybe some of the highs and the lows?
I did do Shakespeare with Stephen Birdman. I did Triumph of Love, and with classical theater, they move around in different spaces. At the time, it was just Central Park, but now they're down at the Battery, I think. They're in different spaces, but they move.
Yeah, I saw their Winter's Tale in Brooklyn a couple of years ago.
Oh, that's right. So they're expanding, which is awesome. And with the experience that I had. Moving around in different parts of the park when people aren't expecting it to be there, just in having their time in the park, and all of a sudden a theater performance shows up, and either they're with it, or they're annoyed by it, or they're indifferent of it. But for the most part, I the experiences I've seen mostly they're kind of excited. What is this? I've had people come up asking me for money while I'm performing with the hat out.
That's so New York.
Yeah, but for the most part, most of my outdoor experiences has been at the Shakespeare Theater New Jersey's outdoor space, and it's on the College of St. Elizabeth. It's a nunnery, basically, and in Madison, New Jersey.
Perfect for Hamlet.
Correct. So I got myself to a nunnery and performed many shows outdoors.
See, I always wondered what Hamlet meant by that, and now I know.
Go to the College of St. Elizabeth right now, he says.
So Jeff, you have like 20 seasons with the Shakespeare Theater of New Jersey, and apparently, according to an article on newjersey.com, you are the Joker. Can you tell us about that?
I tend to play my whole resume from the Shakespeare Theater of New Jersey, except for maybe one performance, is the comedic characters, and oftentimes it's the physical comedy characters, I played Andrew Aguecheek for you out in Tulsa, and I played it at the Shakespeare Theater in New Jersey, and I even played it in college. So I played that role three times, but I tend to play physical comedy roles or comic roles at the Shakespeare Theater in New Jersey. And my secret goal, don't tell anybody this, but I secretly want to play all the clown roles in Shakespeare before I die. The clock is ticking, so.
I think that is a great goal.
I see no reason why that should be a secret, and it's a good thing that you're announcing it to the world on a podcast.
Yeah, but now I have to do it if I announce it.
Right. Well, fair enough, but I think it's a good thing.
What was your favorite clown ever, Jeff?
Oh gosh.
And why?
Well, again, Aguecheek, I just adore. His one line where he says, "I was adored once too," and it's just so heartbreaking. And then he has the lines like, "I am a great eater of beef, and I believe that does harm to my wit." That just says it's like him in his range of thought, and it's beautiful and crazy, and I just adore him. I love Twelfth Night. I think it's one of my favorite Shakespeare's. I tend to lean towards the comedies. I would have to say that I'm terrified. As You Like It.
Touchstone.
Terrifying.
Oh, that's tough.
It's a tough part.
I think Touchstone is one of the most difficult parts in all of Shakespeare. I've seen it done brilliantly, but boy, oh boy, it is daunting. I don't blame you.
Because he's not funny in the same way that the other clowns in Shakespeare are.
Well, honestly, you know, we've talked about this on the pod before. Yep. A lot of the clowns in Shakespeare are challenging because, you know, like nothing dates more poorly than comedy because mm-hmm. oftentimes there are topical references right. that would have been hilarious 500 years ago, you know. But like I this is a weird way of putting it, but I imagine that like in 300 years, nobody's going to understand Rod Blagojevich jokes.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Or maybe even Donald Trump jokes.
Right.
Oh,
or
no.
maybe even.
Oh, no. I'm maybe, sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. A million years from now, people will still know about that.
That's interesting. God. Yeah. Yeah. It would almost be helpful to have like the touchstone character say the line and then have like a translator, you know, like Luther, the Obama anger translator. Like
right.
Today, that would mean.
But I mean, I think I've mentioned this on a pod before, but like. I mean, some of the, like, the, I think we can probably all agree that the, and I don't know about this, Jeff, you can tell me, do you have any desire to play the clown, the small role of the clown in Othello?
Sure. Yeah.
Well, sure, Jeff, you might be the only person I know that could make something of it because.
Right.
I don't know.
I mean, there's a reason that guy is always cut.
Yeah. Interesting. Yes, yeah. There are many reasons why a lot of the clowns are cut. Oftentimes, because the humor is so dated. And
exactly. Yeah. I mean, I directed Oswald That Ends Well a couple of years ago, and I really struggled. I've never seen a Lavache that I liked, and I really struggled with it going in. And I was incredibly fortunate to find a brilliant actor who's done a lot of readings with us now, Josh Micio, who played Lavache for me. And he was a revelation. I was like, oh my God, this part is funny after all. Who knew? Sometimes it just takes a brilliant actor, but you know, I've on the page and on the stage, I had never directed that play before, but I always thought this guy, it's not funny at all, but it can be,
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the clowns, I mean, if you enjoy the character, like I loved playing Don Armato. And that was outdoor stage too. So I got to be even bigger than normal. And I was outrageous and over the top. I had a curly Q hair, like I have a high forehead, right? And I had the curly Q hairline here that came up here and a mustache and just over the top. And it was so much fun. And tying it in with outdoor stage, playing clown characters, comedic characters outside on a stage is you can be bigger, you can be bolder.
I want to ask you about that because I wanted to pick up on that. You're saying you can be bigger, you can make bolder choices, maybe broader choices outside than you can inside. Why is that, do you think?
I think intimacy of the inside of the theater is, for me, it tends to be more intimate. I mean, I can still be big and bold if I need to, but for some reason, having a big audience on the outdoor stage with the sky's the limit, literally,
yeah,
having your character go up into the heavens, and it sounds so cheesy, I don't mean it to sound like that, but just making it big and go out there hitting the last row of the amphitheater with your silliness and over the top so they can see even better your facial expressions, they can hear how silly you are, how big you are, and for some reason bigger works better on outdoor stage. Would you agree, Jen?
Yeah, I do agree. And yeah, I do. And even just for the simple fact that people can hear and see better, you know, if you use more of the body. And we just performed Hamlet in Shenley Plaza, and it was very, very loud. There was all this competing noise. There were like these fraternity boys who were like playing music. And
so just for our listeners that don't know what Shenley Plaza is. So it's an area in Pittsburgh that surrounded by like the University of Pittsburgh and Carnegie Mellon. And it's super, super busy. Yeah,
very busy. And we were excited to perform there. But it made me think that we might need mics because we can't tell everybody else there, be quiet, you know, get off this lawn. It's a giant plaza. And somebody who it was kind of new to Shakespeare, one of the audience members came up and said, I really understood it, even though it was hard to hear, because when they used the big gestures, that really translated it for me. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. Of course, we know that, but we forget that, you know. And I think as actors, you know, even outside, some of them want, the actors want to like look at each other and give it to, it's like that doesn't translate outside. If the audience can't see or hear you, what's the point? You know, don't give your lines upstage or whatever.
Right. But, like, yeah. I think it's the, I would call it the expansiveness. Like, I get it. Like, when we were doing Twelfth Night, you know, and Viola's got that line, you know, make me a willow cabin by your gate. And it ends up with her saying, Olivia. And I remember doing that full voice the first time and hearing the echo outside coming back and coming back and coming back. So, I understand what you mean by that sort of expansiveness, Jeff. Yeah.
I also think that there's something about doing outdoor Shakespeare, especially if it's in the daytime as opposed to the evening, where not only can the audience see you, but you can see them.
Yeah.
And there's a connection with an audience in outdoor Shakespeare, and particularly if it isn't like a great big stage like the Delacorte, where there are all kinds of lights and sets and all this kind of thing, where you're not separated from the audience the way you are in a traditional theater. There's much more, you can see them, you can interact with them in a way that you just can't if they're sitting in the dark looking at a stage that's right. enclosed mm-hmm. by sound and light and effects and everything else.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And I think audience members like to like be a part of the action. And I think, again, that erases some of the fourth wall. And it's like you
obliterates it.
Yeah, it obliterates it totally. And it's like there's no hiding the fact that we are just people performing these roles, you know, and we're all in this together. I kind of like that. I feel like it like levels the playing field and it brings audience and you know, performers together. I like that aspect of it.
At the Shakespeare Theaters of New Jersey's outdoor stage, you can bring food, drink, and all that stuff. Mm. And it's a grass amphitheater. It's not huge, but it's a big, it holds about 500 people. And one of the best parts of it is that you can, it's right on the grass. The stage is on the grass and like the first seat is on the grass too. So you can go, you can walk and interact and sit with them. I've sat with audience members tons of times in that and they love it. You eat their chips, you know, and they drink their beer and they love it, you know. Yeah. And the fact that you can interact like that is so much fun. And one of the other things that the fact, well, Owen, you said this, that you can see the audience because the lights are either just a wash of light. It's even if it's a more intimate, you can still see the audience. You can still, they still feel much more present. And when I'm giving out like a monologue, Don Amato had a monologue. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I talked about excrement.
Yes. Oh, the king. The king playing with your excrement.
Yes. The king playing with my excrement.
Yeah.
And I had a like
which
a,
for, which by the way means his beard.
Oh yeah.
For our audience.
but I had a 10-second Eddie Izzard like like for the audience and myself, like looking at each other, like I'm, you know, yes, you know, and it was fun because I could do it in like seeing them do it and seeing them, and I don't know how to explain it correctly, but it was so much fun to interact with the audience mm-hmm. outdoors. Everybody's just in the mood to be entertained, and it's just a different experience than being inside. Not that it's better or worse, but it's just a different one.
So how would you describe that difference in your relationship to the audience when you're performing outside?
Hmm.
Like they're in on the joke with me. Like they get to be part of the show with me. I'm bringing them in. I could do that breaking the fourth wall in the theater, but the audience is so dark. The lights are off. You can't really see who I'm talking to because the lights are in your eyes. So I'm just, when I'm breaking the fourth wall in a theater, talking to an audience, I can see a few in the front row, but it's not as all inclusive as mm-hmm. it is outdoors and seeing everybody.
Yeah.
Do you find that the audience reacts differently in an outdoor setting than in a regular theater?
I think they do. I think they do. And I think they're more apt to talk back to the action.
Yes, that's for sure.
You know, I like that, or to have utterances, or you know, or although I think Pittsburgh audiences tend to be a little tamer, you know, they're more polite, I think, in many cases than I would say, like my experience, you know, with New York Classical Theater or Hudson Valley Shakespeare Festival. Well, that's more of a, that was outside, but they, when I acted with them, the audience sits, you know. So there is somewhat of a fourth wall. You can't really get in there. But I think that people feel freer, like Pittsburgh Shakespeare in the Parks, it sounds like a lot like New Jersey Shakes. They just bring blankets or chairs and they kind of set up their own configuration and they eat and they drink. And I think it's just more relaxed. Plus they're drunk probably. And that, I think they're just looser, you know, because it, again, it does, it obliterates the fourth wall and it's much more informal, I think.
One of the things that I noticed also in that the audience, especially when it's like a hot, it's a hot day or hot night and they're rooting for you to get through the show because it's so hot out and you're working your butt off, especially in a physically comedic show. I at the Shakespeare Theater in New Jersey, I've done the complete works of William Shakespeare abridged twice.
Oh, wow.
I did it once as an actor and once I directed it. And you know the show, I'm sure, that when it, how strenuous it is for those three actors to get through it. And on a hot night, they're by the end, where they're doing the quick changes at the end, they're rooting for you and they get so excited. And when you're doing the call and response during Hamlet, the audience gets into it. And you can do it inside a theater, but something like that big, that crazy, that audience, that much audience inclusion is, it would be hard to do. It wouldn't be as, I don't know how to describe it. I don't know how to make that transition from outdoor to indoor, why it's so different for those moments.
But it really is.
It is, yeah. I think it's just that there literally are no walls. And so, like you said, Jeff, the sky's the limit, you know. It's much more malleable, I feel like, in terms of like energy and feng shui and give and take. And I don't know. I know that sounds... But
hoopy doopy. It's a little hoopy doopy. No, we're kidding.
Little hoopy doopy. It's just fun, you know. I mean, we had a comment recently. These people said it's great. I love it. I love that we can bring our grandkids in such a low stress environment because otherwise they wouldn't be able to bring their grandkids.
Right.
You know?
That's right.
People can self edit if they need to in a lot of these outdoor Shakespeare situations.
Do you guys find that it's like that some Shakespeare is easier or harder, depending on maybe subject matter or tone doing it in outdoor Shakespeare?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and Jeff, I think said this earlier, I think I personally find it easier to act in the comedies outside. And I think maybe just because, let me think about it. I think the words are, I think the words tend to be easier sometimes and more accessible for the actors, but also for the audience. And there's just that you can, I think with physical comedy, you can use your body so much more. So yes. And I played Launce one time, outdoors, and it was a terrifying experience. And I think because Launce, is the clown in Two Gentlemen of Verona, and he has this, I had a puppet dog, but it's just, I think because it's written in prose, right? It was so hard to memorize. And I personally find verse much easier memorize.
I'm the other way.
Right.
Really?
I have a hard time memorizing verse.
That's funny.
For some reason, I don't know why.
So how do you think, speaking about memorization, how do you think performing outdoors affects like your instruments differently, your body and your voice? Do you prepare differently for an outdoor production than you would for an indoor production?
Yeah. I actually warm up when I'm working outside. I tend to, back in the day, maybe. I don't do as much as vocal warm up as I should. Anytime, but when I'm out doing outdoor stage work, you do have to project more. You do have to use your whole body more. And if you don't stretch out, stretch your vocal cords and your body out, you are screwed. In fact, during Complete Works, I was running up the stairs to make my exit before the first act, at the end of the first act, and I felt like somebody hit me with a softball in my calf, and my my calf muscles snapped, or the tendon
tears. Oh my God.
And oh my God.
And I was out for a week, and a dear friend, Jim Riley, took over for me for a week, and for the last week, and I went in for the very last show. I was able to do the last show, but you got to stretch out. You got to stretch out, especially on those hot summer nights.
Stretch your calves.
Well, and we're not 21 anymore. Let's all be.
I can testify to that as well. To how strenuous it can be, because our listeners know this about me, that I don't act much anymore. But a couple of years ago, I was lured out of semi-retirement to play Falstaff in Henry 4-1, which I couldn't say no to, and. It was a blast, but it was also, it's a very demanding role physically on top of everything else. And I was also padded. So, you know, there's that. And it was the summer and it was outdoors. So, of course, you know, you're sweating your guts out. And I will say I was very lucky, because for those that don't know, one of the last things that happens to that character is he carries the dead body of Hotspur off the stage. And, you know, it's the end of the evening and just kill me. You know, but fortunately, I was in some senses the one of the luckier Falstaffs ever, because we had a brilliant actress, female Hotspur, and she was nice and small. So that and it was still like at the end of the evening, I was like, oh my God, I need a drink. But you know, yes, working outdoors is very, very strenuous.
That's like every King Lear is looking for a tiny little Cordelia.
Exactly. I learned that lesson the hard way.
I had a professor in graduate school, Harold Surratt, actually, would say that, you know, you have to be in shape for theater. Doing a play is like running a race. Doing Shakespeare is like running a marathon. And doing outdoor Shakespeare is like doing an Ironman or a triathlon. And I always thought that was true.
Right. And for, again, because outdoor Shakespeare almost always takes place in summer months.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, sometimes it depends on where you are in the country. But I mean, if you're doing outdoor Shakespeare, it's certainly in Pittsburgh or New York or New Jersey during the summer, it's going to be hot. It's going to be humid. You're going to be sweating.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, another thing that to think about is if you do comedies versus, you know, tragedies or whatever, there's going to be a lot of stage combat in the tragedy, and there's going to be a lot of sword fights, ton of fights, and that's strenuous, and especially outdoors. And if you're in an amphitheater with hills and stuff and stairs to run down, that alone is going to kill you.
Yeah, I played Cassius in an all-female Julius Caesar with Jen's company a couple of years ago, and it was a blast. But because we go from park to park, you know, and because we were fighting, you know, I would go over our playing space with a fine tooth comb to make sure that there were no rocks or roots or anything hidden. You know, me personally have like, you know, the weakest ankles in the world, and I didn't want to roll it while I was trying. So yeah, you know, when there's not an actual stage and you're performing on the grass, you know, you have to really know what's underneath you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And I should also say, like, just in terms again of the weather, the 12th night that Jeff and Lisa and I did together was in Oklahoma in the summertime,
July.
So yeah, it was hotter than the devil's balls.
Hopefully, it was at night and not during the day. Okay, good.
The performances were at night, but the rehearsals were during the day, and it was some. Our director passed out once. Do you remember that, guys?
That's right.
Oh my God.
Oh, in the heat from the sun, she just passed out.
Yeah,
it was in a sunny area. It wasn't under shade.
It wasn't a park.
It was an open park area. We performed at night on a large, you know, state. Like, we had a set and lights and sound and all that stuff. So it was a big production. And the performances were at night, but we rehearsed in the day, like in the open. So I remember bathing in sunscreen.
Wasn't
the stage right across the street from a neighborhood and houses and stuff, and they yelled at us office. Shut up!
Shut up.
Some people have no appreciation for the
That's
bard.
Right. I'm acting here. I'm acting.
Not everybody.
But you know, but you know, like speaking of the difficult, like people panhandling you while you're doing, or the, you know, as we were telling Jen before this, our, the story that our listeners know of, it's Shakespeare, you dick, how that like people can interact interestingly with you. But you know, it shit goes down inside too. Lisa, and you remember we did that Romeo and Juliet for school groups. And like we did it in this theater that insisted on putting an intermission in it so they could sell concessions. And then in act two, the kids started throwing Skittles at us.
Yeah. Like like massive Skittles.
Yeah.
It was so, like hell. You know. It was really
to recreate the groundlings, but only with modern day candy.
Yeah, exactly.
That's funny. Yeah.
I mean, what would the groundlings have thrown that would be equal to?
Oranges.
Yeah, oranges. That's painful.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd rather have an orange thrown at me than Skittles.
The Skittles were painful too. It was pretty
well, bad. It's an orange Skittle, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, so yummy. Yeah.
Fair enough.
One time when I was, we were performing with the Shakespeare Project, which I don't know if that's around anymore in New York City. We would go to, there was a park in the Bronx that we would go to. And I remember one time we were doing The Winter's Tale, and there was nobody in the audience. And then some people did come, and they were like these guys that had been shooting up, literally. And fallen asleep, like passed out in the bushes, and then woke up and didn't know what was happening, and asked us for money. And we finally said, can we please stop this? There were some situations where we thought we may not be totally safe here. And I don't know if this audience is...
Yeah, but, the only stabbing I ever witnessed in all my years living in New York City was the first day of rehearsal on the location of the parking lot when I did The Tempest and Shakespeare in the parking lot. And we got there the first day, and these two guys lurched into the parking lot fighting, and they had box cutters, and they were trying to cut each other. It turned out they were rival superintendents of buildings in the area that had gotten drunk and gotten into a fight. And everybody was fine. Nobody really got hurt. But I was like, oh, good. It's a stabbing.
I like how you started that by saying the only time.
like it's going to happen that often.
Well, listen, I grew up in the 70s in the Lower East Side, man. So it happened a lot. But I just didn't ever see it live until I did Shakespeare. You know, it took Shakespeare to bring that to me.
Brings out the best and the worst in people.
It does. Yes. It does.
So Shakespeare in general, in productions, can run the gamut from really highly produced to bare bones and stripped down. So what are your experiences with and opinions about either side or everything in between? Do you have a preference? Do you have a story?
I tend to like the stripped down things. And I guess that's just me. And I don't know if there's like a really stubborn streak in me that likes hard things. You know, I like challenges. I like to, you know, the kind of the grittier, the better. And I like that about my time in New York companies. Although working with Hudson Valley Shakespeare Festival, where it was, there are lights and there's somewhat of a set, you know, and it's at least you're in contained in a tent. But I don't know, I like bringing Shakespeare to a found space and then creating a space. And that challenge just excites me personally. I like that.
I could go either way myself. I agree with everything Jen said. I think it's... found spaces are one wonderful to explore and to experience. I do have to say though, as a physical actor, I like a big playground to play on. So a big set to run around on is always fun and exciting for me, especially on tech weekend where you get on the stage and you get to run around. I could go either way, especially when it's like in like a smaller theater company. The smaller sets and the more stripped down sets are totally fine. I have no problem with that, and I think it's fun either way. I can see the merits of both.
So
we were talking before a little bit about like preparing physically and vocally for shows and the vocal challenge of doing outdoor Shakespeare as opposed to indoor Shakespeare. So this is, and we kind of touched on microphones a little bit, but I definitely want to ask the question, to mic or not to mic? How do you guys feel about microphones when it comes to doing outdoor Shakespeare? Because some people think it's essential and some people just fucking hate it.
Huh. Yeah, that's interesting. Why do people fucking hate it?
Well, I think I remember I saw, I don't, maybe you saw too, when Patrick Stewart did The Tempest in the Delacorte, I think in the 90s. And I actually knew somebody who was working sound on that show. And I had heard that Patrick Stewart almost said no to doing that because he hated microphones and was told, well, it's you. Nobody can do a full performance in the Delacorte unmiked. And so he eventually agreed to do it. But at the very end of that show, when Prospero, you know, that famous goodbye monologue, he's divesting himself of all his magic. The last, 12 or 14 lines of that monologue, he gestured up to the booth and went like, we made a cutting motion, and they cut his mic, and he did the last basically sonnet worth of the show unmiked for that huge audience. And I was sitting way in the back, you could hear every word. There's no way he could have done the full performance, but he by God did that last bit. And it was one of the great coup de théâtre that I ever saw, because of course, you know, what is a microphone but magic?
Right.
Really.
Right.
Right. And so he was divesting himself even of that theatrical magic in saying goodbye. And it was chilling and brilliant. But on the other hand, the rest of the evening would have been impossible without it. So, I mean, in answer to your question, why do some people hate it? I think because, you know, they would, I mean, someone like Patrick Stewart with that beautiful voice that's so cultivated, so trained, and he's performed everywhere, mostly without microphones, one assumes. And so if he's forced to use it, he did not wish to do that. And again, like if you have that technique, I saw Derek Jacobi play King Lear at that huge, the Harvey Theater at BAM, you know, that gigantic barn. And he whispered, "Blow Winds and Crack Your Cheeks," that entire monologue. And you could hear every word with no mics. And so, you know, I guess some people feel that mics are cheating.
I think maybe part of that is, and this is kind of related. There's a lot of, and you know, I teach as well, Jeffrey. And so there are kids today who do musical theater who have gorgeous voices, but they, if they were in a Broadway house, they would not be heard at the back without a microphone. And so I think there's a pride, certainly as an older Shakespearean actor, in having trained to the point where you can be heard without a microphone, you know? So I think that's part of it as well, that they're prideful about the fact that they are able to do it.
Right. Yeah, I guess I feel, and I can't claim to know what Patrick Stewart was thinking at that moment when he said, "I don't like microphones," but I feel like I like to erase any type of thing, for lack of a better word, that comes between the performer and the audience. And I feel like having no microphone is like, I'm just talking to you, you know, I don't know. There's something very nice about the very bare bones thing. But on the other hand, I mean, I think it just depends on the space and the actor. I mean, there are always actors who can be heard no matter what, even almost like when a performer.
Jeff just raised his hand for our
listeners. You can't hear that, but.
Yeah, and then there are others who, you know, it's like, take a deep breath, fund the sound with the air, you know, and for some reason, for whatever reason, they just, we all have different instruments, right? I mean, that is somewhat, you know, malleable to a certain extent, but if you don't have the breath support and you have a small, I don't know why certain people can't be heard, and it drives me crazy because you can tell them again and again you can't be heard. It's like, I think it just depends on the space. I think certainly to not have microphones is much easier and cheaper.
I don't like the feel, and that doesn't matter about the feel, but usually I sweat a lot with outdoors, and if the tape doesn't, if it falls off, it's so frustrating because it's distracting, distracts me, it takes me out of the moment. Mm-hmm. That's why, I mean, if I don't have to wear a microphone, great, especially outdoors, even better. And I'm usually pretty loud, but if I have to wear a microphone, I'm okay with it. I just don't, it just drives me crazy if the tape comes off, or like I prefer not wearing fake mustaches. I prefer to grow one, but if I'm playing multiple roles that different characters, whatever, I hate it when the mustache starts to come off, so it takes me out of it. That kind of thing takes me out of the moment. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the reasons why I don't like microphones myself, but I'm not against them. Mm-hmm. Especially, I think you're right, Jen. I think it's the size of the theater.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, you don't have any control over feedback or anything like that. And that's frustrating too. That can also pull you out of your character.
Right. Yeah. I recently saw a show, not a Shakespeare show, but a show in Pittsburgh where everybody was mic'd and we were actually pretty close to the stage, although it was kind of a noisy venue. And it was ear blasting how loud they were. And it was uncomfortable. It was tortuous.
What show?
Maybe I shouldn't say. I'll put it in the chat.
Well, I will. I mean,
you're more politic than I am, Jen.
I tend to agree. I prefer, if possible, to be without microphone as well, for all of the reasons that have been said. But I will say on the pro side, one company that that I work for here in New York, doing very much like New York Classical, doing live Shakespeare in different parks all over the place. And you encounter so much extraneous noise, like the drones or helicopters or just chatter, or even like trains going by if you are in certain locations. I mean, you can be in a place where the Long Island Railroad or Metro North is whipping by every 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I did work for one company that did mic everyone. Uh-huh. And I did find in some of those circumstances where there's a lot of distraction, that it was a help.
Yeah,
it was a help to in order to get the audience to pay some attention,
focus. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, at the end of the day, if you can't be heard, then
yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. That's extremely frustrating. And I had to tell the actors of Hamlet, if a helicopter flies over, don't try.
Yeah, just wait.
Go like this. And put your hands on your hips and look up
this, at the sky. This brave or hanging firmament.
Well, actually, the Shakespeare Theater, they're known for having interludes when airplanes go by. They are in the path of the Morristown Airport.
Uh-huh.
And the flight paths go right over the stage. And sometimes there's like 22 planes one night for one show. I think that's the record.
Oh my
and
God.
And oftentimes what they'll do, especially if it's a comedy, they'll have every show has a different thing that they do when a plane starts to come by, and they'll say airplane. And then all of a sudden they go into a dance routine, or they have a big party on stage, something, because you can't hear anything no matter what you do until that plane's gone. So you got to do something. And so it's fun. It's fun for the audience. They love it until you do it 22 times and it's a little much, but if you get like 3 or 4 times, you kind of get excited and you make it work for you if you can. Lean into it. Yeah.
Yeah. So this actually, Jeff, I have to ask you this question. This actually doesn't have anything to do necessarily with outdoor Shakespeare, but I believe you did that Cymbeline at Lincoln Center a few years ago. Is that not? And Martha Plimpton is a really good friend of mine. And she was Imogen in that production. Was she not?
She was indeed.
Can you, I did not see that production. Can you tell us a little something about your experience doing that production?
Oh, well, that was my first, I mean, I think it's technically Broadway. I mean, it's at Lincoln Center.
Oh yeah, it is. Yeah. Yep. It counts.
It counts, right? And it was my
first. Oh yeah.
And John Cullum, Michael Cerberus. I got to work with Michael Cerberus.
Wow. Was he posthumous?
Yeah, he was. And it was, wonderful production. I was one of the two fight captains in the show. Rick Sordley did the fights, and so I did a lot of work with the fights and stuff, and Felicia Rashad was in it, and then John Cullum threw me to the ground, and it was a lot of fun, exciting stuff. I was a low person on the totem pole, but I was one of in the chorus room at Lincoln Center, getting dressed and all that stuff. But that big assembling on a huge stage like that in such a grandiose manner, it was just a gorgeous production. I had never done anything to that scale. Mm-hmm. It was huge for me, and it was an incredible experience. I can't really. There's so many things I could talk about. I don't know where to begin. Specifically, do you have something?
Oh no, I just wondered what it was like. I wish I'd seen it. I really do. Mark Lamos directed it, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Yeah. Actually, Martha is here in Pittsburgh filming a TV series right now.
That's right.
Is she? Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yes. And did you know Michael Cerveris is a Pittsburgher?
I did not know that.
Yes.
I did not know that either.
He was here all during the pandemic. In fact, I've done a reading of one of his dad's plays before.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, my God.
Small world.
Funny. Yeah. I love Cymbeline. Cymbeline is my favorite play, I think.
It's so beautiful.
I find it beautiful. Yeah, I feel like it has everything. I love it.
I'm a big fan too. I don't know that I would say it was my favorite, but that's so hard. People ask that. I'm sure you guys get asked that question all the time. What is your favorite Shakespeare play? I'm like, I can't answer that question. I can't answer that question.
Hard. Yeah, I mean, you like different ones for different reasons, right?
Yes, of course.
Absolutely.
Am I allowed to say Macbeth? I love that one. LA and I, Lisa Ann and I did a production of Macbeth 3 with Lisa Ann playing Macbeth, playing five other role characters.
Banquo and Macduff.
Oh, it was really fun. One of the witches. It was great. And I love that. I love Macbeth because it's so tightly written. It's like this perfect little snack, you know? It's so quick and it just... It doesn't ramble, really.
It's a good one for the average stage.
Yeah, it was.
You know what? That's a good point, because I tend to think in terms of that question of which of the plays work better indoors or outdoors. I think I'm wrong to oversimplify that. The more serious it is, the harder it is. You know, like, I mean, King Lear, I think, is really hard to do outside. And, you know, Comedy of Errors, piece of cake, right? But you're right. I think that I'm very superstitious, so please forgive me. I will just say the Scottish play works great outside.
Sigh.
Especially at night.
Lisa and I have a running thing about this.
I think it works great anywhere. And actually, we did Pittsburgh Shakespeare in the Parks, did King Lear a couple of years ago, and I played Edmund. Wow, that was exhausting. But the storm scene was great outside. We had these big pieces of fabric, and we would... And so I felt like it was so exhausting. It was so tiring to be outside, but I think it worked well outside. So that's interesting.
Well, and you know, I mean, for God's sake, and this is so obvious that we've spent this entire conversation without saying it, but it should be said at least once that, you know, 99% of Shakespeare's plays were written to be performed outdoors. I mean, maybe the later plays, like maybe Winter's Tale and Tempest, were written to be done in the Blackfriars, but generally speaking, even those plays certainly were done outside. And so King Lear, Hamlet, all of these plays were written to be performed and were performed outside.
Yeah, that's what I tell my students. I'm teaching a Shakespeare page to stage class, and I said, you know, when you're working with the words, sing it, do spoken word, move around, do a dance thing, you know, it's not meant to be subtle.
Yeah. Yeah. 3,000 people outside, like every damn day at 2 o'clock.
Well, and also, I mean, you know, it's like hearing another language for a modern day audience, you know. I mean, if you went to China and you had to go to the bathroom, I'm sure that you could make yourself understood to someone that spoke no English just by, you know, gesticulating what is going on. And so
taking out your penis.
Huh?
Sorry, maybe I'm not supposed to say that.
Oh, they say fuck all the time in this.
We say fuck all the time on this.
Oh, yes. No, yes. This. If you haven't noticed already, this is an R-rated podcast.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah. No worries there.
That's great.
Our very first episode was Filthy Shakespeare, and we probably said the word dick at least 100 times in that one.
Well, dick is in the title of our podcast.
That's right. Oh, and so speaking of that, the name of the podcast, Jen, as we described to you, is based on a story from an outdoor Shakespeare production. So do you guys have any favorite stories from some of your outdoor Shakespeare experiences?
Go ahead, Jen.
Yeah, I have a couple. A really good one was just when, God, and I can't remember the play because I'm old, but It was one of the plays where, you know, it was Twelfth Night or something, where the girl dresses up as a boy to go. Okay. And so this little kid in the front row actually spoke to the other character and said, let's say it was like Rosalind and Orlando, you know, like, hey, Orlando, it's not actually a boy. She's actually a girl. You know?
I think that was As You Like It, actually.
Just things like that. When things like that happen, it's like, you
Well,
know.
when they're into it so much that they want to like interact with the actors and tell them what's going on, it's great.
I love that. And then just another funny story. This is not during a performance, but when I first moved to Pittsburgh, and I had to apply, we have to apply every year to get a permit from the parks, the city, the special events or the parks department or whatever. So the first year they granted me the permit, and then they said, actually, we're temporarily revoking it. And I said, why? And they said, because we don't understand, like, where are you going to build the stage? And I said, there's no stage, there's no set. And they said, well, how can you act without a set? And I said, what do you mean? And they said, well, you have to have a stage to act on. And I said, no, we just act on the grass. And so the person I was talking to said, well, we don't believe you, so we're going to send, no, I'm not kidding, they said, we're going to send two parks people out like Monday, and they start work really early, like the ass crack of dawn. So at like 7 o'clock in the morning, you're going to meet them in Frick Park on the grass, and you're going to show them what. And I said, what do you mean? I'm going to act. And they met me there. They drove up in their little parks Jeep, and they said, act, show us what you mean. And I said, do you, yeah. And so I just did like a little bit of a monologue,
Oh
and
my
I had to go
God. Wow.
and stuff, and I just did like a hell in a monologue, and they looked at each other and they said, okay, that's enough, all right, good. And then they left. I'm
Get
not
up
kidding.
there and start acting.
That's
Yeah.
so bizarre.
Dance, monkey. Dance.
It was bizarre because it was like they didn't seem like they enjoyed it or anything. And it was one of those things where you think, like, you think, did that, after it happens, you know, you think, did that really happen? Or did I somehow just conjure that up in my mind? But yeah, that happened. And I like to tell that story. So.
Wow.
I don't have any stories necessary. I'm sure there are some that I couldn't think of any outdoor ones, although the interactions sitting in with the audience, eating their chips, all there's so many of those moments where you have these crazy little 1 second interactions with people all the time. But there was one time I was doing Tempest at Shakespeare Theater, New Jersey, on the indoor stage, on their main stage, and I was playing Trinculo. And we were, it was one of the scenes, just before one of the scenes between Caliban, Trinculo, Stefano, and Ariel was in the background. my dear friend Greg Dorellian, who was playing Caliban, I think it was Kiwi. He had allergic reaction to whatever he ate. His lips blew up.
Oh my God.
And just before we came on
Oh my
stage,
God.
and I didn't see it until we got on stage. I go up first, he comes out behind, and I turn around, and he's like in this green monster costume with these red fat
Oh my
lips.
God.
Me, Stefano, and I we couldn't barely get through the scene. Ariel, who's in the idea is that he's in this like aura, but it's a sack. It's like a spandex sack with two masks on his hands and his hands, so it was a really cool effect. Like you could stretch it out and it looked like a three heads, but it's like shaking inside, the whole back is shaking, and it was a mess. We just gave up basically. I mean, we got through it, but it was just so, we were horrible actors that scene. Terrible, just terrible.
Ugh.
Sometimes you lose it on stage. That
Oh
happened to
yeah.
me. My friend and I, we were doing Helena and Hermia in Midsummer, and we were down at the Battery Park City, and it had rained. It was like June, and it was just soaked, and I threw myself down and into a mud puddle, not knowing it was, and then got and then came up and was just dripping with mud. And my
Oh
friend
my
Tracy
God.
playing Hermia just looked at me and started laughing and started wiping the mud off my face. It was
Oh.
the same type of thing. She just, you know.
I think the audience loves that.
They do.
Well, I did a production of a Michigan Shakespeare Festival years ago when I was in college, and I played Master Ford. And you guys remember they have false teeth, right?
Yes.
Oh, right.
Yes.
I can feel that. So I was doing a scene with Method Ford. I'm doing something, and I articulated too hard, and my teeth went flying on stage. And I looked at him, and I stared at him. I picked him up, put him in my mouth, and my next line was, "I shall proclaim myself what I am." The audience erupted with laughter because they had no idea what it was until I put them in my mouth, and it was just ridiculous. But that was fun.
That's a very handy thing to have.
Yeah, I don't use it as often as as you might think, but it's there if I need it.
Many, many favorite moments.
Oh yeah.
Well, this has been just so much fun, you guys.
Such a delight. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You all in person or meet that would
be lovely, right?
Wouldn't that be nice?
It's kind of an amazing city, I have to say. I came here for grad school and I thought, fuck me, 3 years in Pittsburgh, I'll kill myself. And then here I am 15 years later.
We're
so
both still here. Yeah.
It's kind of amazing. Yeah. So join us next time. In the meantime, please visit our website at www.thebardcastyoudick.com. As Jeff was saying, it's been a really hard time for actors and theater professionals of all kinds. So if you have any extra money to throw our way, you can become a patron of ours on our patreon.com page, or there's also a link to our PayPal page, or go to one of our favorite charities, either Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS, or the Actors Fund. We have links for both of those on our website.
And please, as always, if you enjoyed the episode, don't forget to leave us a 5-star review at your favorite podcast provider. And if you also would see fit to write a written review, we appreciate that as well.
Okay, so you guys, this is something we do at the end of every episode. I'm going to say, and remember, and then everybody's going to say, it's Shakespeare, you dick.
Got it.
We never get it right, but we always try.
Because it's super fun.
This time it'll work.
Yes.
Are we ready?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, it's Shakespeare! See how terrible that is?
It's impossible on Zoom. It's just impossible to get it together on Zoom.
That was terrible.
The preceding podcast was a production of Country Matters, LLC, copyright 2021, all rights reserved.